WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. Here's a tip for you today. Go for a walk. All of this election news will be there when you get back. If you're able, one of the best and often easiest things to do for your mind and body is just to put one foot in front of the other. Science says so. Whether it's through the woods or just around your neighborhood, walking has been shown to decrease stress, anxiety, and depression. And the benefits of walking go beyond our emotional state, too. According to neuroscientist Shane O'Mara, making a habit of walking can improve our memories and our ability to learn and think. It can also significantly delay the physical ailments associated with aging. Given the stress and strain of the past year, we thought it would be great to check in with O'Mara, who is a professor of experimental brain research at Trinity College in Dublin. He is also the author of the book, In Praise of Walking, A New Scientific Exploration. Shane, thanks for being with us.
It's great to be with you, Allison.
We tend to think of walking as sort of a neural activity, something we just do without thinking about it. What is actually happening in our brains as we walk?
So it's one of these automatic things that we kind of overlook, but there's loads going on. So I'm sitting at the moment, and if I decided to get up and walk, a signal would have to come from the frontal lobes of my brain to form an intention. That would have to pass through the motor areas of my brain to the spinal cord and then into the muscles. And I would actually have to get up. So my body would suddenly be in a very different position. My brain would be working hard to actually keep me standing. And then you must move. So it's actually a very complicated thing, but we don't appreciate the complexity because we have overlearned it so much. And we only discover how difficult it is if we have, for example, something like a stroke where we have to learn how to walk all over again.
As I mentioned in my intro, I said to people, go out and take a walk today, given everything that's happening in the United States. Can you explain to somebody why it might be beneficial on a day like today to take a walk? What could be the upsides of it?
Well, so there's an old metaphor about how you can walk away from your problems. And I think on a day like today, maybe that's one that we should all take a little bit more seriously. What is definitively the case is that going for a walk gives you a boost to well-being, which is reasonably enduring. And people underestimate the boost that they will get from going for a walk. And they do so quite substantially. People are always very surprised if you get them to measure how they feel before they go for a walk and how they feel after a walk at the discrepancy between the two. And this is because walking actually, for most people, most of the time, is intrinsically rewarding, especially if we do it with somebody else. We are social walkers at our core.
I'm curious about how humans and our ability to learn to walk. And actually, I'm very fascinated. I'm always fascinated when you see animals shortly after birth, like horses or foals, and they just stand up and they start to walk. That is not the case with human beings. What does that say about our relationship to walking as a species, that it is slowly learned?
Yeah, so actually walking is kind of curious, isn't it? So if you think about contrast with both the animals that you've mentioned and also with another human capacity, which is language. There's the really interesting differences and similarities to draw out here. So to learn to speak in a native tongue, you need to be exposed to a language community. You need to hear its grammar, you need to hear its words, all of those kinds of things. But as an infant, when you make the transition from crawling to being seated or sitting up to standing, you don't actually need to be exposed to others who are walking. This is a motor program that unfolds, and it unfolds at a particular time and in a very reliable sequence from about the age of, let's say, 10 or 11 months all the way on to about 12, or sorry, to about 19 or 20 months. And there are obviously differences between children where that's concerned. Now, animals like horses and others, of course, can move very quickly after birth. They are preternatural walkers, but they have to be because there are predators around, like humans, who will capture them, perhaps eat them, all those kinds of things. Whereas humans, of course, have caregivers, and we're really unusual in the amount of time that we spend looking after our young, and we have this long extended period of childhood that is without parallel in the animal kingdom.
What about when AI or bots are quote unquote taught to walk? What is different about the way that a robot walks and learns to walk compared to a human?
Yeah, so it's very, very different. So in terms of how humans or other species learn to walk, we go through this long period where the spinal cord is sculpted. We have muscle groups that must be trained. We have to engage in kind of what's called sensory motor feedback. We get information from the environment and we act on the environment. That's quite different to a robot. A robot doesn't grow up. It doesn't mature. Somebody has programmed it to do what it does. And it doesn't learn, it doesn't adapt in any way with the fluidity and grace that humans do. So it's turned out to be computationally very, very difficult to teach robots to walk. And it's only when, in the last number of years, when the mechanisms that have been uncovered in animals have been adapted and copied in robots that you get the kind of grace and motion in a robot that you would see in animals or in cats or dogs or whatever your other species would happen to be.
So what do you think that says about walking?
That walking is a remarkably complicated process that depends on really a couple of different things. So if you think about our heads for a moment, as far as our heads are concerned, our bodies are hung from our heads and we make contact with the ground. And of course, robots aren't built like that. They're built from the feet up, whereas we're literally hung from our heads. And the job of what's known as the vestibular system is to keep our heads stable in space as we walk around. And they do that very, very successfully. So there's that component to it. Robots don't benefit from movement. And a robot isn't going to get aerobically fit. It's not going to become less depressed if it walks. It's not going to become more creative. And it's certainly not going to walk in solidarity with others to protest against a political regime, which is something that is uniquely human. In terms of the demonstrative capacity of our walking, we do it to signal how we feel to others.
My guest is Shane O'Mara. The name of the book is In Praise of Walking, A New Scientific Exploration. You write about the overlap between emotional states, anxiety, and what we think as the main function of the brain, like learning or memory. How are these two spheres connected and how are they affected by walking? Our emotions and then our functional part of our brain.
Yeah, so I think we kind of get this idea from all these wonderful pictures that we see of brains lighting up doing tasks, that there are lots and lots of specialized areas of the brain for allocated to lots of different things. And it turns out actually, and I think this is one of the most remarkable convergences in brain science over the last 20 years, that the brain regions that are concerned with imagination, with mind wandering, with knowing where you are in space, knowing where you are in time, are all housed in the one diffuse network, which goes by the name of the hippocampal formation. And this area is also dramatically affected by depression and stress, and is the first area that undergoes loss of tissue when you get Alzheimer's disease. So you have this multifunctional part of the brain that participates in lots and lots of different functions. And it is also affected by the things that you do. So it gets larger if you engage in lots and lots of spatial tasks. There's the famous study of taxi drivers in London who have to learn 30,000 streets, and they have a slightly larger hippocampus compared to bus drivers who don't have to learn all of those streets. And there are many studies showing that just getting aerobically fit actually increases the volume of the hippocampus, helps you or makes it less likely that you will become depressed, and improves your memory. So that you can think of this part of the brain at least as being functioning a little like a muscle.
I something just came to mind, and I'd love your thoughts on it, that, you know, a lot of people during the pandemic, especially those of us who live in cities and walking cities, people have talked about feeling a little malaise, a bit of ennui, just not quite feeling right. And I'm wondering if it's attached to the fact that we're all walkers, and for several months we were told to stay home and not walk and not go outside.
My guess would be yes. I know from my own case that if, you know, the weather here in Ireland can be terrible, we can have long periods of rain, which make it difficult to get out. And I definitely feel glued up and less kind of responsive to things as a result. And being trapped in your apartment and not being able to go for a proper walk, I think, you know, is a compression of the range of natural activity that you engage in. And you see, we get this positive feedback from physical activity. And if that's denied to you, of course, it's going to have an effect on you.
How does an effect on the brain, how does the effect of the brain of a walk through the woods, let's say, compared to a walk through a city?
Yeah, so one of the kind of points that I make in the book is you have the phrase the leafy suburbs, I'm sure, in the US. Leafy suburbs are expensive compared to, let's say, an apartment block beside a freeway. And this is because people intuitively know that there is good things about living beside and being exposed to nature. Nature is good for us in all sorts of ways. And you can show this in a whole variety of ways. One of the simplest is, if you challenge people to walk in the woods and you measure their stress hormones before and after the walk, you'll find that there's a decrease in the level of their stress hormones. And you find all sorts of other beneficial changes like this. In fact, in Japan, they have almost institutionalized this by calling it forest bathing, and they recommend it as a practice. But regular exposure to nature is good for us. And this is why apartments overlooking Central Park will be much more expensive than apartments that do not overlook Central Park.
New York is often called a walkable city, and you write about the walkability index. What are some of the factors that can make a city walkable for people who need to live in the city?
Yeah, so the natural definition, and I think it's a reasonable one, is that you should be able to do all of the activities of your everyday life on foot within a few minutes, let's say 10 or 15 minutes of your front door. And the cities can excel at doing this. New York is a fantastic example of that because you have so many things so close together. And this is a kind of a recapitulation of a vision for the city that we had during the Renaissance and times like that, when you had mixed use areas, people lived cheek by jowl, but everything you needed to do was close by, so you could walk around very, very easily. And New York, Boston and San Francisco top the walkability league in the US because you can walk around so easily and so well.
There are some people who say, I just don't like to walk. They even have an aversion to it. Is there anything in brain chemistry of the people who don't like to walk, or is that just purely a preference that somebody has decided?
This is a really good question, and it kind of speaks to the kind of core drives that we humans are subject to. So we have to get up and move around in order to source energy to live, in other words, to get food. And at the same time, we need to conserve that energy for when times are going to be bad, so we should sit around. And for all of human history, until the last 50 or 80 years, calories were rare, and people had to be very active to get calories. And that's not the case anymore. If I walk out my front door, I can go down to my local village a few minutes away, and I can get foods from all over the world very, very easily, as well as having food delivered to me. So food sourcing is easy. Calories are easy. But the other side of that, balancing that equation, activity is something we've engineered out of our lives. Partly, I suspect, because, you know, somewhere inside us where we have this realization that we need to conserve energy. So I think the focus on saying to individuals, this is not right, you need to move, admonishing them in one way or another is not the correct way to get people to move. I think if you want to get people to move, we really need to focus on their social environment, get them to move in the context of other people that they enjoy the company of. We need to change the environment to make it easier for people to walk around in, rather than, you know, having the car as the first option for you. Should make the streets very walkable. And I've seen pictures, because obviously I haven't been to New York since the pandemic hit, where you have all of these wonderful changes on the streets where people can now sit outside. And my own local town has done exactly the same thing. It's amazing how you can do things very quickly if you have to.
The name of the book is In Praise of Walking, A New Scientific Exploration. It is by Shane O'Mara. Shane, thanks for being with us.
Alison, thank you so much.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.